Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
African American households often pay a significantly higher percentage of their income on energy bills. With a look at energy equity and practical solutions, here's InfoTrack reporter Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks, Chris. George Holmesy is the director of Environmental Studies Program and an associate professor of public administration at Binghamton University in New York, and he led a recent study that found that energy bills hit minority households in the U.S. the hardest. Professor Holmesy, let's start with the basics. What exactly is an energy burden, and why is that important to measure for households and communities?
Energy burden is a simple concept. It is how much of a family's household income goes towards energy bills, towards paying for your stove, for your heating and cooling, for your electricity to run your computer and lights, hot water, and so on. So if a family's household income is, say, $100,000 and they pay $3,000 in utility bills, the energy burden is 3%. If your neighbor earns $50,000 a year but pays the same $3,000 because their house is very similar to yours, the energy burden is 6%. So it's that chunk of household income that goes towards paying energy bills. And it's important because there is a limited amount of money in any of our households. And so whatever I need to spend on energy and on utilities, I can't spend on something else. And the U.S. government has done surveys, and so have other researchers, that showed that people trade off, you know, because of my energy bill, I won't buy this food or this medicine, or I will keep my home at a lower temperature than I feel comfortable in order to make ends meet because of the energy bill.
Your study found that African American households face significantly higher energy burdens even after accounting for income. Why do you think that is, and what surprised you most in this data?
There's probably many reasons why these African American communities face higher energy burdens. The two that we zeroed in on were the housing stock in these communities. As our study shows, African American communities, by and large, tend to have older housing stock, which means that they are probably in less energy efficient homes. They have less insulation. They might have older appliances. That is one of the factors that contributes to their higher energy burden. They use more resources. We also see that in these communities, they tend to have higher rental rates. Now, that matters because of what's called the split incentive problem. If a landlord puts in more insulation or upgrades appliances, who benefits from that? It's the tenant who pays the energy bill. So the landlord has no incentive to do those energy efficiency upgrades because they don't reap the economic benefit. And so we think those are two of the problems that face Black households. And why are these communities facing that? Well, it's a long history of disinvestment in these communities. Certainly going back to at least the early 20th century redlining by banks, when these communities were seen as places not worthy of investment in the housing by banks or by others. And we've seen in many different areas that redlining and that underinvestment has really hurt things over time.
Can you explain in your study what you found in terms of the difference between race and income?
One of the things that we talk about a lot in terms of environmental justice is this idea that poor people suffer from extra burdens, in this case, an extra environmental burden. But what is often lost is this idea that it's not just income. It is also, there is something about race that burdens certain communities of colors more. And so what we found in our study is not only that on average, African Americans tend to pay more for their energy bill, 5.1% versus 3.2%, which is the average, versus 3%, which is what white households pay on average. So we found that, but we found that even in census tracts that have the same or about the same average income, African American communities tend to pay more. So for example, for all the census tracts that are under $35,000 in average income, Black families tend to pay on average 7.5% of their income for energy, whereas white families only pay 5.7%. Now, both are higher than the average, which makes sense because they are lower income households. But what was interesting and what we really wanted to demonstrate is that African American families paid more. So there is something about where they live that puts this extra burden, this extra energy burden on these Black families.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Professor George Holmesy from Binghamton University in New York, and he led a recent study that found that energy bills hit minority households in the U.S. hardest. A lot of people might assume that this is only an issue for low-income households, but your research shows middle-class Black families are also affected. Can you talk about why that is?
I think it, again, has to do with neighborhood characteristics. A lot of the places where Black households are able to live or do live tend to be in these poorer areas. And they might be middle class, but they also might have much less income available to do the kinds of fixes that higher income families would be able to undertake to make their houses more energy efficient, for example, even if they're homeowners.
How does the history of housing discrimination feed into the disparities that you uncovered in this study?
I think it has to do with the level of investment that people are willing to make in some of these communities. And this is a historical challenge that has gone back to before the early 20th century, but certainly in the early 20th century, when many of these communities were redlined by the federal government as perhaps poor investments for banks, for other investors, because they were seen as places where the value would never grow because they were full of immigrants or full of African Americans. And so that history over time compounds itself. People stay stuck in these areas, can never get the capital to get out. And there are other theories around social capital and the ability to make connections, can't get out of some of these communities. And so that means people are sort of stuck in these communities, stuck in these underinvested homes.
You mentioned a moment ago that landlords often don't really have an incentive to make their apartments or other properties more energy efficient. What advice can you offer to a renter who maybe would like to bring down costs and improve efficiency themselves?
A number of communities have programs where they'll give renters kits to upgrade some of their, say, energy efficient light bulbs, to put in weather stripping, to use low flow water faucets to save water and the energy that goes into heating hot water. These are simple things that can possibly impact your bottom line energy costs. The reality is, if you're in a poor structure and the heat is just flowing out of the walls, windows, and roofs, it's going to be very hard to get it under control. So there are some things that renters can do, but really this has to be tackled by local governments, state governments, to make the landlords upgrade these buildings.
Speaking of local and state governments, what policy changes or programs would you like to see put in place to reduce these inequities?
Well, it'll depend on the place. We have another project going on with another professor here at Binghamton University, Christina Marty, and we're looking at what local governments have been doing to address the split incentive problem, for example. One of the things that a community might do is they have rental inspection programs in these communities. And in these communities with rental inspection programs, some of them could impose stricter rules on energy efficiency. And so in one community that we talked to, they've been able to bring the energy efficiency of thousands of units higher and higher because they have these rental inspections that happen every 5 or 10 years. And that means every time they go through, they can see if the windows are good, if the doors are good, if the insulation is good, and push these kinds of improvements on landlords, which is great because then tenants of all income levels and all races would benefit.
I know we've touched on this just a bit, but just as a final thought, if you could speak directly to policymakers or community leaders, what's the one urgent step you'd tell them to take right now to reduce energy burdens for minority households?
From the perspective of what we studied, I think it would be a policy that would encourage or require landlords to upgrade their units. I think from the perspective of homeowners, local governments need to understand that it's not just about poverty, but that the officials need to get into the community, make connections in the communities, so they can understand that there are these various problems, of which we've only identified two, that would possibly account for energy burden. And to be able to get out there, build trust in communities and say, okay, now let me into your home. Let me tell you where your energy is leaking. Let me tell you what you can do as a renter to fix it. Let me tell you what we can do more as a homeowner to fix it. and then at a city level, figure out what we can do as a city to encourage or require landlords to fix these things.
Interesting topic. Professor George Holmesy from Binghamton University, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
For InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.